International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, the U.S. State Department responds to a tense incident with Iran. We'll have expert analysis of the detention of American sailors. We'll hear President Obama looking to the future in his State of the Union address.
We live in a time of extraordinary change. Change that's reshaping the way we live, the way we work, our planet, our place in the world.
And The Weeknd is making a big splash in the music world. It's right here on The Voice of America. The United States has confirmed that Iran released 10 U.S. Navy sailors today, one day after they were detained when they drifted into Iranian territorial waters. A Pentagon statement said there was no indication the 9 men and 1 woman were harmed while in Iranian custody. The sailors were on 2 small boats in the Persian Gulf between Kuwait and Bahrain when U.S. controllers lost contact with them. U.S. officials said they were picked up near Farsi Island, and the Pentagon said today that they left the island in the same 2 boats before being taken ashore by Navy aircraft. Over at the U.S. State Department, there has been a statement from U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. And joining us on the line is our correspondent at State, Pam Dawkins. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
What is his reaction?
Well, the Secretary of State, Secretary Kerry, apparently intervened pretty early in this incident, shortly after there was word of the sailors' detention. Senior administration officials said he reached out to his counterpart, Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif. In a statement, officials said that Kerry engaged immediately when he was made aware of the situation. Today, there was a second statement from Kerry. In this one, he said he was pleased that the sailors have been safely returned to U.S. hands. He also expressed gratitude to Iranian authorities for what he said was their cooperation and says the fact that the issue was efficiently resolved was a testament to what he called the critical role diplomacy played in keeping the U.S. safe and strong.
Pam, this incident comes during a time of tense relations between the U.S. and Iran.
Absolutely. Even though Iran, the U.S., and other world powers appear to be near an agreement on the nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, there is U.S. concern about Iranian behavior on other issues. For example, in December, Iran launched a rocket near U.S. warships in the Strait of Hormuz. That incident raised widespread concerns. There has also been ongoing criticism, even as Iran moves forward with the steps needed to implement the nuclear deal, that it is continuing to develop other aspects of its weapons program.
Well, thank you very much, Pam, for joining us from the U.S. State Department.
Thank you.
Former diplomat James Jeffrey, now with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, says an investigation will determine whether this was a case of innocent passage for the sailors detained by Iran.
We need to know exactly what their track was. Most importantly, were they in or had they entered and left Iranian waters, or were they in Iranian waters at any time? The second thing is the track is important because there is a concept of innocent passage, so that just because a foreign military vessel enters your waters doesn't mean that you can seize that vessel and the personnel. Legally, you can make a case, but again, if they are looking like they're doing innocent passage, that is, in some cases, you do innocent passage because it's the only way from point A to point B. And other times, you know, you might have navigational problems. But the two questions are, does it look like you're not sailing towards the territory? And secondly, is there any evidence of hostile activity? Examples of that for a small boat, for bigger boats, there are all kinds of things, launching helicopters and other things. If you had frogmen who were going overboard or looking like they were going overboard, if the crew seemed to be, you know, obviously armed with long weapons and machine guns and such, and so you might think that this is a mini invasion, or you wanting to land commandos or something, those all would have generated a rational self-defense mission that would have authorized, under international law and logic, seizing and investigating. And then if they could explain why they were basically innocent and were going from point A to point B, and here's the engine that's conked out, you'd let them go.
Former diplomat James Jeffrey with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Images of the U.S. sailors detained by Iran are doing the rounds on social media. My colleague Michael Lippin is here to tell us more. Michael?
Hi, Susan. Thank you. Well, Iranian state media have released a variety of still photos and even short video clips of the moments when Iranian Revolutionary Guards seized the U.S. Navy boats and the aftermath of that incident. The images have been tweeted by the Fars news agency, as well as Press TV and other Iranian news outlets. The images show the U.S. sailors with their hands raised above their heads and kneeling as the Iranian forces boarded the U.S. boats. Now, in photos taken some hours later, you can also see the same U.S. sailors sitting in a room and being given a meal by their Iranian captors. Now, those photos have triggered some angry reactions on Twitter. Let me give you a sample. This is from a Kurdish Twitter user by the name of Garmiani Bakur. That user says, "Iran releases humiliating pictures of American sailors, a moral victory for the Iranian Ayatollahs, however you look at it." Here's a tweet from the U.S. Republican House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, whose handle is @GOPLeader. He asks a rhetorical question. "Really, U.S. Secretary of State Kerry expresses his gratitude to Iran after they seized and detained American sailors?" So that's Kevin McCarthy saying that he doesn't think the U.S. should have been expressing any gratitude to Iran at all. And a tweet from Frances Townsend. She is a former U.S. Homeland Security official. She says, "Disgraceful and offensive Iran video of U.S. sailors' capture shows a violation of international law."
Well, there's usually a positive and a negative to everything, and this is no exception. What are people saying in support of the release of the sailors?
Well, you're right, Susan. I have seen a couple of Americans post messages saying they're happy about what's happened with the sailors being released. This is a tweet from Shira Kipnis. She says, "Happy to hear that the sailors detained by Iran were finally freed days before the start of the Iranian nuclear deal." And then here's a tweet from Nathaniel Schur. He says, "Can I just point out that if the president of the U.S. doesn't work with Iran on the Iran deal, those 10 American sailors are still being held hostage. #diplomacyworks. Susan?
Okay, well, thank you, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Researchers at Cornell University have made a finding that could lead to new and improved cancer treatments. Studying mice with metastatic prostate cancer, the research team discovered some powerful proteins that seek, attack, and then destroy cancer cells flowing in the bloodstream. The researchers created microscopic bubbles they filled with a protein called tumor necrosis factor-related apoptosis-inducing ligand, or TRAIL for short, and administered doses to the cancer-ridden mice. The TRAIL protein bubbles, which attach themselves to white blood cells, kill tumor cells as they travel through the bloodstream. The researchers found that the TRAIL protein prevents the creation and growth of tumors that can spread to other parts of the body. The treatment not only prevented the secondary tumors from developing, but the research team found that the mice's primary tumors had also shrunk in size. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And now, expert reaction to the detention and release of the American sailors by Iran. International Edition's Mohammed El-Shenawy examined the significance of the Iranian swift release and the U.S.-Iranian diplomacy behind it with David Ottaway, Middle East Fellow at the Wilson Center.
Mr. Ottaway, does the release of the 10 U.S. sailors detained by Iran indicate that U.S.-Iranian relations have passed a delicate test?
Well, it's certainly a good sign that Iran is not in a mood to cause trouble or do anything to upset the lifting of sanctions. It's probably also a good sign in the sense that it may indicate the Iranians do indeed want to figure out how to get along better with the United States. And so I think there are several reasons to be hopeful and maybe even optimistic that there may be an improvement in relations between Iran and the United States in the wake of the lifting of sanctions.
What do you make of the unusual statement from the Revolutionary Guards that the sailors' inclusion was unintentional?
Well, I think that's another indication that in the struggle between hardliners and moderates, between, let's say, the Iranian Foreign Ministry and the Revolutionary Guards, that the hardliners are being taken in hand by a moderate faction of the Iranian government, and presumably with the support of Ayatollah Khamenei. So this is another indication that Iranian behavior may be in the process of changing, and that's good news.
There are many conservatives and hardliners in both Iran and the U.S. who would have loved to sabotage the nuclear agreement with Iran over such an incident. How effective was the phone diplomacy between U.S. Secretary of State Kerry and his Iranian counterpart Javad Zarif in averting such escalation?
Well, I mean, look at the outcome. They were able to deal with their respective hardliners, both in Iran and in the United States. As you indicate, there were plenty of hardliners who didn't want to see this agreement go through and did their best to prevent it, as did Israel. But Obama and Kerry stood up to the opposition, and they prevailed. And the same is true of Rouhani in Iran. So you have to say that they were very effective in pulling this off.
President Obama, in his State of the Union address, praised the diplomatic approach the U.S. is taking to deal with Iran. But the Republicans are saying that it is a sign of weakness. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the diplomatic approach has certainly paid off and avoided, as Obama said, avoided another war in the Middle East and getting the United States stuck into yet another conflict. So on this issue, I come down on the side of the administration and its approach towards Iran.
David Ottaway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up on International Edition, President Obama makes his case for the future, and a second album proves it pays to try again. Well, President Obama has delivered his final State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress and the American people. And he said the State of the Union is strong. The annual speech typically offers a blueprint of a president's policy goals. But in the final year of his presidency, Mr. Obama chose to taking a longer view beyond his time in office.
I don't want to just talk about next year. I want to focus on the next 5 years, the next 10 years, and beyond. We live in a time of extraordinary change. Change that's reshaping the way we live, the way we work, our planet, our place in the world. It's change that promises amazing medical breakthroughs, but also economic disruptions that strain working families. It promises education for girls in the most remote villages, but also connects terrorists plotting an ocean away. America's been through big changes before. Wars and depression, the influx of new immigrants. There have been those who told us to fear the future, and each time we overcame those fears, we made change work for us, always extending America's promise outward to the next frontier, to more people. And because we did, because we saw opportunity where others saw peril, we emerged stronger and better than before. Our unique strengths as a nation, our optimism and work ethic, our spirit of discovery, our diversity, our commitment to rule of law, these things give us everything we need to ensure prosperity and security for generations to come.
Mr. Obama lauded what he called the strongest, most durable economy in the world, but called on lawmakers to improve economic security for Americans. He vowed to make the campaign of going after terrorist networks that threaten America's foreign policy priority number one, while calling for a smarter approach to global problems that mobilizes the world to work together to solve them. And he appealed for less division in American political debate, warning democracy grinds to a halt without a willingness to compromise. Political analyst and associate editor Jeffrey Skelling of the Sabato Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia told VOA's Victor Beatty the political divisions Mr. Obama spoke about were clearly evident during the speech.
To some degree, you saw the polarization that exists in American politics today. I mean, for most of the applause line, you know, it was only Democrats standing. And despite what the president was talking about and his hopes and wishes for the country to sort of work together better, to have, you know, less divisions in our politics, the reality of the situation is that we live in a very polarized, divided time. So I think that the optics did reflect that. And in terms of focus, that sort of stuck out to me was, you know, his defense of what the United States has been doing internationally. He's obviously gotten a lot of criticism. In fact, I mean, as of late, that's been really probably the number one issue, number one point of discussion, even beyond jobs and the economy, is the United States' role in foreign policy, the national security of the United States, with the threat of terrorism and the growth of ISIS in the Middle East and what the U.S. is doing to address it. And the president was pretty direct, I would say, about defending how he's approached it. And he sort of laid out his thesis, which is, yes, ISIS is dangerous. Yes, these terrorists are awful and, you know, need to be destroyed, and we will pursue them. But they do not pose an existential threat to the United States. And I think he defended that point pretty starkly. And he's got a lot of criticism for that attitude. And obviously, you know, polls show that Americans are very frightened of what's going on in the world today and feel, you know, a terrorist attack could be around the corner. So he was, I think, trying to combat that a bit by showing that this is what I think about it. And I don't know if he succeeded in that, in his goal of, you know, perhaps convincing Americans to perhaps be a little less scared of what's going on. But at the end of the day, he defended what he's been doing.
Anything that will last from the speech? Anything that may be enacted by Congress?
You know, I guess it's possible, you know, some things on criminal justice reform could happen. But it's difficult to see a lot of agreement happening, at least in the short term. Even if there were room for compromise, it's an election year, and that's probably the worst time to try to seek compromise. It's interesting because, you know, the president tried to have something of a hopeful tone, but at times he sounded disappointed in the American people and in Congress. But I think he also tried to strike, you know, a note of we can do better and we will do better in the long run.
And do you expect those divisions that he was referring to likely will continue in his last year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the president is going to be a focal point of the campaign rhetoric one way or the other. For the eventual Democratic nominee, given the importance of the Obama coalition to Democrats' chances in 2016, you're going to absolutely see the Democratic nominee for president cozy up to Obama on most issues. And whoever the Republican nominee is going to definitely go after the Obama agenda and try to sort of stoke the Republican base to turn out. An easy way of doing that is to go after the president, who they dislike heavily.
In the Republican response, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley criticized Mr. Obama's domestic policies for leaving a rising national debt, health care that is less affordable, and cities in chaos. She said the November election offers Americans a chance to turn in a new direction. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
A London-based company is using an inexpensive, faster way for making orthotics, the braces and supports that help children and people with disabilities. Navid Parvez is co-founder of Andiamo with partner Samia Parvez.
We create 3D printed orthotics, which are custom bracing for the outside of the body. We do that specifically for children. And we use 3D scanning alongside 3D printing.
Traditional orthotics can be cumbersome with an uncomfortable plaster fitting process and a lengthy wait for the brace. For Andiamo's orthotics, a quick scan becomes a highly accurate 3D image that can become any 3D printed device, according to Samia Parvez.
We're talking about back braces, hand splints, leg splints, anything that supports your posture.
An estimated 100 million people worldwide need orthotics devices. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
In the music world, The Weeknd has made a big splash in the last year, and my colleague Larry London, host of Border Crossings, has joined us here once again in the studio and is going to tell us all about it. Larry, you're on.
All right. It's my turn,
Your
guess.
Your turn.
All right. Well, The Weeknd, whose real name is Abel Tesfaye, is a Canadian singer. It seems like this last year has been huge for Canadian singers. There's been so many of them on the charts. Justin Bieber, Shawn Mendes, the list goes on. But The Weeknd made a big splash, to use your phrase, over the last year with his second album, which is the year's fifth best-selling album. behind Adele's 25 and Justin Bieber's Purpose. He's number five with over 2 million copies of Behind the Madness being sold. And that's largely on the hits that he's had. This is his second album. A lot of people don't realize this. They think that this is his debut album because no one knew of The Weeknd before this album. But he actually put out an album in 2013 called Kissland that didn't do as well, obviously, as this album, which has earned him 7 Grammy nominations. And so he's had big songs. Number one song he had this past year did very well for him, called Earned It. And then he became the first artist in 7 years to have 2 songs out of 3 on the top of the Billboard charts.
Very good, very
with
good.
His big hits called Can't Feel My Face and The Hills. And because of our large audience in Africa, he's got roots in Ethiopia. His family heritage comes from Ethiopia, so he's huge throughout Africa.
I like I Can't Feel My Face, but this guy has a problem with his spelling.
Yes, he does. Well, he's taken the E off of end at the end of The Weeknd. It's W-E-E-K-N-D. And the reason he did that is there's already a band that uses the correct spelling of The Weeknd, and he wanted to avoid a lawsuit and that problem. So he goes by W-E-E-K-N-D.
Do we know anything about his personal life?
Yeah, he's been involved with the supermodel, Gigi Hadid, and so that relationship's been on and off in the tabloids recently. But the two of them have spent some time together. He made a guest appearance with Taylor Swift on her 1989 tour. They're good friends. She, I guess, was amazed by his hair. He has very unique-looking hair.
How?
his style of hair is kind of unkept and uncut, and he lets it do its own thing, and he kind of piles it on the top of the head. And so Taylor Swift, this is his words now, he said at an after party, they went to an awards after party, and she came up to him and started petting his hair.
Ooh.
She said she's never seen hair like that.
I hope he enjoyed that.
As long as it didn't jump off the top of his head, I guess it was okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Larry.
All right. Well, Susan, by the way, the new song is called In the Night.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us today.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Trafficking in persons or modern slavery is a global multi-billion-dollar criminal enterprise. It destabilizes governments and feeds the corruption that compromises the ability of nations to prosper. It fuels other criminal activities such as trafficking or illicit drugs and gun smuggling. It is one of the means by which terrorists fund their activities. Today, it is estimated that there are more than 20 million victims of trafficking globally. No country in the world is immune from this blight on humanity. The United States is one of the top destination countries for human trafficking, as well as for goods produced using forced labor. This means that if we are to fight this scourge, we must begin at home. 3 years ago, President Barack Obama took a number of steps to strengthen and unify the U.S. government response to modern slavery, beginning with a focus on 4 priority areas: rule of law, that is, investigation, arrest, and prosecution of traffickers; victim assistance, such as health and trauma services; child welfare, ensuring that no forced labor was used anywhere along the supply chain in the production and delivery of goods and services purchased by the United States government; and public awareness and outreach, making the public aware of the scope and extent of the problem, and training people within the government and the public at large how to identify victims of trafficking. Part of this awareness campaign is the President's annual proclamation of January as National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. Our intelligence teams have devoted more resources to identifying trafficking networks, law enforcement officers have been working to dismantle those networks, and prosecutors have striven to punish traffickers, said President Obama in this year's proclamation. We have also enhanced our domestic protection so foreign-born workers better understand their rights. To address the underlying conditions that enable human trafficking in the first place, the United States is promoting development and economic growth across the globe, said President Obama. As we work to end human trafficking here in the United States, we will continue to lead the effort to root it out around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.